Thank you very much. I'm Elizabeth. I'm a compulsive overeater. I've been in the program 35 years, maintaining an 80-pound weight loss, and abstinent for 11 years this time around. Okay, so my story is, I'm going to give it in three parts. The misery before OA, the hope when I came to OA, and the joy I feel now. So I'm going to try and spend as little time on the misery as possible, but there's a lot of it. So I'm going to run through it as fast as I can. I had very early on years of sexual molestation. I'm going to be frank here, but not give details. All right. It wasn't my father. He was kind and good. He was my hero. But my mom knew and she did nothing. She was an anxious, fragile, mean, and unpredictable person. And she walked out when I was about six. So then I didn't even have a mother. I blamed myself. I blamed my anger for her leaving. And I decided it wasn't safe to be angry. Bad things happen. I was also a total outcast at school. No one would talk to me. No one would play with me. I never knew why. And my dad, left alone as a single parent of two kids, he was suicidal. And I was afraid I was going to lose him too. My reaction to that was I suppressed all my need and my grief and all my other feelings to be cheerful for him so he would stick around. As a result, inside, I felt a deep loneliness. I felt worthless. I felt self-hatred, especially when any neediness poked its head up. Oh, I despised that part of me. Self-hatred, despair. But I tried not to notice it because I was trying to numb out my feelings because I thought human pain was just absolutely unbearable. And I pretty much lived in a fantasy world. But that was inside. Outside, I was tough and self-reliant, but no feelings, like I said, like a robot. I called it a robot, moving around through life, but nobody inside, like an empty suit of armor. Just walking around, I was sure that people would see through the armor and tell there was nothing inside. Now around 40, this went on for, you know, I lived like that until I was 40. And at that point, I was raped and I gave up on life totally. And I gave myself totally to compulsive eating. And I ate every waking moment. I stuffed myself. I lost a job, a good job, because I couldn't stop eating long enough even to call in and say I was sick, let alone, you know, show up for work. And so I was fired for absenteeism after 20 years with the company and a good reputation. I weighed 300 pounds. I walked with a cane, all the stuff that goes with being that big. I tried every diet I ever heard of, and I often lost a little weight. I always gained more. And people tried their best to help me. My mom wanted me to have surgery, but I knew that wouldn't be the answer because I would just go right on eating afterwards. My brother saw me the year I had gained 60 pounds, and so he lived in another country in Canada. I only saw him every year, and he was angry. He said, "How can you do this? How can you let yourself go like this?" Well, I didn't have an answer to that question. Co-workers whose projects I was supposed to be working on, they came to me and said, please stop this, stop it. I couldn't stop. Friends came to me in tears saying, do something, stop it. I hardened my heart. What could I do? I didn't know how to stop it. And doctors and therapists, nobody knew about OA though, but they all did their very, very best to help me. But you know, no human power could relieve my obsession. And meanwhile, I hated myself. I loathed myself. I wanted to die, and I started making plans. I mentioned it to somebody, And she said, I know something you might want to try first. And she took me. Here comes the hope. We're done with the misery. Here comes the hope. She took me to my first OA meeting. She was even a member of a different fellowship. She wasn't an OA member, but she knew about OA and she knew I needed it. She drove me there. And of course, that meant that she had the car. So when I heard things I didn't like, I couldn't leave. I saw a lot that I did like, but and I saw people with backgrounds like mine, eating like me, or other real serious problems with food behind them. And it was behind them. And now they were happy and free and they were laughing about stuff. I couldn't believe it. And they were friendly and they were welcoming. This was the first place I had ever walked into where people were glad to see me. I was a total outcast at school, like I said. No one would play with me. No one would talk to me. Here, people were glad to see me. I couldn't believe it. But I wanted what they had. But I was an atheist, a hardcore family-raised atheist. We knew for sure there wasn't any God. It's not like there was any question about it. And it was important to us, very important to us. It was part of our family identity. So when I heard the word God, this was a big problem for me. And somebody took me aside for a newcomers meeting and said, acceptance is the key. Well, I thought acceptance meant condoning. I thought they were asking me to accept as part of God's plan the things that had happened to me. And as far as I was concerned, those were unacceptable, and I was never going to do that. And between the word God and the word acceptance, I would have walked out if I had had the car. But I expressed that to the woman, and she said, take what you like and leave the rest. Just be glad you're here. You know, we're glad to see you. Hang in there and see what happens. So I did. Soon, they asked me to do service, and I was not abstinent yet. I had only been in a couple of months. What they asked me to do was lead the meeting. And, you know, when you walk into your first meeting, the leader is like, in my mind, the leader. You know, I wasn't about to be the leader. I was brand new. But she said, you can do it. You just read from a script. And I said, oh, well. And when I agreed, she reached out to hand me the key to the church. I was stunned. They were going to trust me with the key to the church. I couldn't believe it. And I very hesitantly reached out my hand for it. And the minute that key hit my hand, everything changed. I had been auditing OA. I had been a visitor. I had been longing to be in, but I didn't feel in. But the minute I took that key, I belonged. I was a member. I knew I was home. And this was the first place in my whole life that I had ever belonged anywhere. So service has always been really important to me. It changed my life. I've done service at the group level, and then I got into intergroup, and then actually, I was fortunate enough to be able to go to region and to world as a delegate. There's a huge, wide world of OA out there. And it really impressed me that whatever gets done, you know, in OA, nobody is making any money off of our misery, not like the outside world. And OA, everything that gets done is done by us, by volunteers taking turns at doing these jobs. And everybody can have a turn. There's even writing our literature. We don't pay anybody to write the literature. You know, our 12 and 12 was the first book we had, and it took 20 years. First of group consciences of World OA, first to decide that we needed a book, because other than that, we just had AA literature. Then to say, okay, what's it going to be like? Who's going to write it? What are the chapters going to be like? and going back and back and back year after year and revising it until it was approved by the group conscience of World OA. So, and service has brought me a life of happy usefulness. We're promised that, and it can happen. And with that comes joy. But first I want to talk about the recovery work, because, you know, you go to meetings, of course. But the way I like to look at it is there's homework between the meeting. And that includes, well, having a sponsor. And when the time comes, sponsoring other people. You know, it can be really spiritual doing that. I sometimes feel the flow of love and energy coming into me from my sponsor and flowing out of me to the people I've sponsored. It's an important part of the experience. And then there's working the steps and using the tools and whatever it takes every day to turn that day over to a higher power. And open the window blinds. You know, it's action. It takes action to change the way I feel and the way I think, not the other way around. And part of action to me sounds like the sun is always out there shining, but if I keep the blinds closed, I don't see the sun. But if I take the action to raise the blinds, even a tiny little bit, the sunshine of the spirit is going to flow in. So what it's like now, and here comes joy. We've come from misery through hope to joy. And physically, well, like I said, I've lost 80 pounds so far, still losing. I am mobile again. I used to walk with a cane and it hurt, and I walked very hesitantly. I couldn't go up and down stairs hardly at all. Now I don't walk super fast, but I walk just fine. I don't use a cane or anything like that. I can put on my own socks. I can get down on the floor to an exercise mat and I can get up off the floor again. That is a miracle. And so physically, and I feel, and I'm in remarkable health actually for my age. And I really appreciate that. So spiritually, and this was a problem for me. This was the hard part because I'm still pretty much an atheist. What I hear when I hear the word God is something I do not believe in. Not at all. I don't think God intervenes and does things. I think there are coincidences, fortunate, happy coincidences, but coincidences. This is just me, me the atheist. I don't think anybody has a master plan. I don't think things happen for a reason. But I tried to think that. I tried hard. I studied theology of all kinds of religions, trying to find some explanation for the problems of the world, the terrible things that happen in the world, and yet be asked to trust a benevolent, you know, God. I could not solve that problem. Theologians have been asking that problem for thousands of years, and the answers they come up with did not satisfy me. So I stopped. I stopped trying to understand. And that was the key to me. That was the turning point. I figured something is out there. I am never going to understand it, and that's okay. And it can still work for me. I don't have to name it or define it or put it in a box or anything like that. It's like if I'm sitting in the dark and there's a light switch there, do I have to understand how that light switch works? Do I have to understand electricity? Am I going to sit in the dark and not flip the switch because I don't understand how it works? No. So the important thing to me is the willingness. And if I don't have willingness, I pray for it. I pray. I just don't know who I'm praying to. Willingness to turn the day over, and I like to say, and I saw this in our literature, to cooperate with the guidance of a higher power.
5 minutes remaining.
Okay, thank you. Now, I consider God, and this is from our literature too, a healing source of life-giving love. And I have actually had some deeply spiritual experiences. Well, you know, one thing, I consider staying for a group conscience meeting a spiritual experience. Everybody working together, everybody being heard, and then everybody getting behind the decision as the will of the group for the benefit and of OA as a whole. And that's, you know, it's business, but the spirit is there for sure. One of the experiences I had was I was sitting in an airport. I'm just going to tell the story. I have time. And I saw this very large woman, about as big as I've ever seen anybody. And she was wearing a mini skirt with her legs wide apart. And you can imagine what I could see. I was sitting facing her in a row of seats. And I was thinking, somebody should say something to this person. And then it just occurred to me, I'm judging her, not for her size, but for what she's wearing and what she's doing. And if the thought also occurred to me, it just floated into my mind, I'll bet my higher power doesn't judge her. And all of a sudden I thought, I'll bet higher power doesn't judge me either. And I was in tears and I could feel something warm. I could feel love flowing and flowing and flowing over me and into me like a waterfall. And things like that happen. And I know there's something there. So that's physically and spiritually, and I'm going to end with emotionally. I don't feel like a victim of circumstance anymore. The past is behind me. I don't live in it anymore. It still happened, but it's not important to me. I'm glad to wake up in the morning. I used to wake up sorry that I hadn't died in the night, and now I wake up feeling happy and grateful for all the blessings I have. And I have friends. I actually have friends. And I'm certainly not an outcast anymore. And I have enormous gratitude. And best of all, you guys loved me until I could love myself. And I am now developing self-compassion, self-kindness. And that's joy. That I am living in joy. Thank you.